You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and keep your eyes on that radar. Dr. Bill talked about severe weather in the mix. Some showers kind of creeping into South Washington, Northwest Mobile County, but that is really way out in front of the main line that's back around Jackson, Mississippi. Does look pretty intense at that point. Should be a later afternoon, evening thing for us, but we'll keep you updated on that. Speaking of updates, so I'm listening yesterday to the White House presser and the discussion of cyber attacks on our country. Now, this is something that's been discussed over, gosh, the 25-plus days of the Russian war in Ukraine. Even beforehand, before the tanks actually rolled across, this discussion was up, and we talked to my friend Abe Harper from Harper Technologies about it. But yesterday, they seemed like they were putting an exclamation point on this, Abe, that maybe there's some intel that says this is going to happen soon, or do you think it's are you feeling it that something may happen in the next, I don't know, week, month?
Yeah, so first of all, it's always great to be here. Thanks again for having me. This kind of boils down to that conversation we had before of how much of it are things that are actually new and how much of it is something that we already have ongoing that we should be aware of. You got to think back. Let's not talk about just Russia and Ukraine and war right now. Let's talk back last year or a year before. It all runs together with the pandemic.
Yeah, Colonial Pipeline.
The pipeline, exactly. That was DarkSide. That was a Russian hack group, but it was an attack on an American industry. So to an extent, yeah, I think we're always under imminent pressure to defend ourselves against those type of cyber attacks. I believe right now that alert should be heightened, and justifiably so. I mean, Russia's feeling all kind of economic sanctions, and how else to get back at your most verbal ally or verbal enemy than to attack them where it hurts them, which is our pocketbook.
They in the presser, they talked yesterday that there had been meetings with, I guess, certain industries or businesses, even before they had the presser, that they had met with them and gave them alerts. Or what do they tell them? I mean, do they tell them, hey, this is going to happen, or this is how we think it's going to happen? I mean, obviously, it's behind closed doors, but what do you think they're telling those industries?
Yeah, a lot of those conversations are probably very much around disaster recovery, mitigation, and emergency operations. So, those conversations are trending toward, hey, what's your backup plan if we were to disconnect, from whatever external servicing or whatever facilities that might be interdependent that Russia could exploit to get in? You got to remember, a cyber attack doesn't happen without an entry point. If there's a way to isolate that, then it's a whole different conversation. But, I think the conversations that they're having are, have good defenses up, have your alertness, kind of on par, but also have a contingency plan to operate if you had to do without technological assets for a period of time.
Yeah, the what-if plan. You mentioned that we get this picture. It's the meme in our head when somebody says a cyber attack. We picture people in a dimly lit room somewhere in Russia, all these people typing away, right? And they're trying to break the code or this or that. But you said, in some of these cases, it comes in through an email, like a phishing scheme, or physically. This is the interesting part, too. If there was a saboteur, somebody that worked for, some big industry or whatever, they could physically put a, come in that way, right? Put a thumb drive in or something like that. Not even hacking in through the web.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, malicious criminal activity in a cyber context has taken on a persona of being, like you said, 40 guys sitting in a dark room somewhere in a Russian lab with big TVs all around and green dots on the screen. And the fact of the matter is the people that are doing this are probably sitting in their living room or sitting in a coffee shop. But it doesn't have to be that. That's not the standard. I mean, hacking started with two devices in the same room, just connected via a tether. So if you get a lone wolf bad actor that, or even part of a group that is embedded to go into an organization and steal the information, we're probably going to cover it with a different name, like espionage or something to that effect. But it's still cyber attack.
Now, you know, the things that, you know, we talk about the Colonial Pipeline, and we start thinking about, I mean, is there anything that's in the big utility world that's not connected? I mean, from pipelines to power plants to traffic lights, all those scare me that those could be hit on the same day. And, you know, I mean, heck, people can't stand, you know, if we get a big rain here in town, there's wrecks everywhere, let alone if we're hit cyber-wise.
Well, and now, you know, you start talking about some of the standards and some of the governance that goes around it. You've got NIST and CJIS, which is Criminal Justice Information System. You have PCI, which is Payment Computer Information, I think it is. So you have all these different governance platform and policies that those organizations should be adhering to, which generally includes a way to make a disjunct unit from the internet if you need to do so, or from a connected system. In places where there's really good design, somebody has built the system in a way that you more or less have a ripcord if you need to. But the industries that are not using that in the proper method, like, you know, it's a proximate scenario. This looks like a Colonial Pipeline. They had VPNs, they had two-factor authentication, mm-hmm. but then they had a user's credentials that nobody changed after the user had been departed for several months. So it still comes down to, you know, in effect, human error that allowed the exploit to happen.
Is there a way to, you know, I'm thinking about this. I saw a note before the show started from my children's school that said, phones and internet are down at the school right now. Do you think the attack could come on infrastructure versus, you know, individual, and I say infrastructure outside utilities, on the physical infrastructure of the web, you know, be it fiber optic or however? I mean, do you think they could attack that, the backbone?
You know, there's certain areas that they could, I'm sure.
Is it resilient, or is there like, I mean, you know, if you and I were looking at this, are there like five places, if you physically damage this, then you know, it's all shut down?
No. By and large, our infrastructure is redundant, resilient. It's like power infrastructure. You know, okay. You take out one substation, it reroutes elsewhere to try and service the area. So that's the part I'm talking about when we're discussing the intelligent design and build for redundancy. So, yeah, somebody went in and physically attacked it, you know, lobbed the fiber in half.
Right.
Barring they cut the transatlantic fiber, I don't know how much damage they could really do.
Go ahead.
And it's kind of like a tornado or hurricane hits our area. You know, you have certain pockets that get hit hard and lose internet for a period of time, and then while the infrastructure giants are out doing their part, putting it back together, other areas are still functioning.
Let's bring it from the bigger players to all the rest of us. I see this. Here's my pivot. Steve just texted, I have Kaspersky antivirus on my home PC. Should I be worried? I guess that's a Russian joke. Yeah.
That's a good question. You know, at this point, regulated industries that are supplied by Russian sourcing, you know, take petroleum, for example, we're disconnecting from it, but it's an economic sanction method. You know, we're not doing it because we think it's going to make any significant impact. But when you've got an antivirus product that's manufactured, that may be the brand that it's under, but it may be manufactured by a company that's anywhere located in the world. Plus, the regulatory hurdles that has to go through to get into production. I wouldn't carry a lot of worry about it, but, you know, some people would say, I just don't want any part of it. Just uninstall it and put something different on there, too.
So what do this. Let's you and I have a conversation because you do, you know, you do our security. You work with us here at the station. So you and I are going to have our conversation. Let everybody listen in. What should I be doing right now?
The main things are always, you know, the 3-2-1 rule of backup. You'll always hear me say that. 3 copies, 2 different locations, at least 1 off-site. Have a contingency plan for any hardware assets that you have that are critical to your operation. That might look like having the backup audited, tested, and verified, and knowing what your time to recovery is, but also maybe even having a replacement for that asset sitting around in the event that you said, I really don't want to bother with bringing this one back online. I'm going to throw it away and put a brand new one in place. And aside from that, just kind of, you know, keeping a watchful eye for anything relevant coming out of the tech world with meaningful resourcing to say, you know, if Cisco or Microsoft or Google or even Facebook, if someone speaks up and says, hey, they've detected something that's relevant, you know, being more aware situationally of what's going on so that you can then disconnect or treat your systems however you need to.
I mean, so you're talking beyond just the backup thing, which is all individuals and business owners are listening out there going, dang it, yeah, I gotta go do my backups. But do that, but physically having, what, another hard drive, another CPU or CPU plural, right, ready to go?
Yeah, if your concern is the imminence of what could happen physically or digitally, you'll want to have, obviously, your data can never be replaced. That's always the rule that we tell everyone. We can replace any of your hardware, but if your data gets compromised or if you lose it without a backup, there's not much we can do. But having a redundancy there, and even, you know, with the way things are right now, if you got fiber optic internet, and some, let's say there was an infrastructure attack and somebody cut a fiber, if it impaired your service provider, be that AT&T or MediaCom or Comcast or Cox Cable, whomever, if it impaired them as a carrier, the likelihood is that if your cell phone is on that same provider, you're also not going to have cell service. So even having a hotspot wouldn't do you any good.
Good point. Just joining us, talking to Abe Harper from Harper Technologies about the remarks yesterday from the White House, this increased level. I don't know if we're on a 1 to 5 or whatever, but it seems like an increased threat out there. How do we figure that out? Can you put it in like Sullivanese that I can understand? Like, how is there, like, we could see when we have satellite images of Russian tanks and troops amassing on the border, that's a sign, right, that something in the conventional war and in the physical world is happening. Is there, what are they looking for out there that says, hey, they're getting ready, they're fixing to do something here?
Yeah. I think a big part of that is you're going to start seeing, yeah, we've talked about this before. I'm trying to put it back in the same conversation that we had, but your IP address is like your digital thumbprint. Now, you can wear a pair of gloves that have another thumbprint on them if you want to in the IT world. That's the caveat. But by and large, your physical thumbprint is your IP address. So there's a certain block and schema that's used for Russia, for example, certain block schema used for the United States, used for South America, Central America. As those IP addresses start appearing more, and you got to remember, you've got companies like Gartner or Dell or even the IC3 that we've talked about before, mm-hmm. that are watching the world stage of data and traffic. So think of it just like a highway with people, but you can see their thumbprint on that highway. So every IP address on that highway, if you've got a monitoring segment, you can tell who's passing through that entrance and who's passing through that exit. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying, like, why is this same? Why are they? It makes no normal sense for this same thumbprint to be coming through this checkpoint over and over again.
Exactly. Or that thumbprint is very similar to 150,000 other thumbprints that we've seen come through the same pathway. What's going on? So that's kind of the rudimentary, you know, crux of what's going on. Now you can ramp it up, and we can get down in the, you know, talking about the ones and zeros and the packets of the actual thumbprint.
I can't handle that. You know that. I can't. But you explained it on like highways and stuff. Something I can picture. I appreciate that. So once again, for whether you're, you know, at the big business level down to your, you know, your home computer or your small business computer, if you have not followed the 3-2-1 rule. Once again, the 3-2-1 is what and how should we do it?
3 copies, 2 locations, at least 1 off-site. And that means having, you know, either a cloud-based with a secondary or having your, you know, you've got your main copy of your data, your primary backup, and then your secondary backup.
What do you think about the physical, you know, I've had this conversation before, but the physical, you know, the external drives, you know, where you physically take, you know, you put the information on there and take that with you somewhere else versus a cloud. Do you recommend that?
They're fine. They're okay to work with. And the only real consideration to give is when you're dealing with a hard drive, there's two types. There's solid state, and then there's conventional. Conventional, you want to think of it as like a little record player inside of a box. If the needle touches the record, which it does, if it gets dropped or while it's moving, it's moved, the record's no good anymore. So you want to get a solid state if you're going to do that and move it around a lot. But if it's just going to sit on your desk at home and you just want to have a second copy there, then the conventionals are fine for that too.
All right. A lot of questions coming in. Let me ask one from the text line here before we wrap up. Sean in Baldwin County says, does Abe recommend using a VPN? That's just a general question, even not in these times. Do you recommend that?
So, you know, VPNs just depend on what your goal is. They will tunnel your traffic securely from your device to the ending device, but it still shows that you're sending and receiving traffic. So a lot of times we'll hear people wanting to use a VPN to get around their company's firewall or, you know, to make sure, because there are certain countries that block us as the United States by our fingerprint from accessing systems on their network. So that's another reason that you'll hear people say they want to use a VPN to try and access a system that is detecting a different IP address. I don't know of any real reason in a personal context to do it. In a business world context, they're used to connect two different locations over a private network. And yes, if you're doing business back to your office, or if you're doing business for a vendor or for a customer, you need to be connected via VPN to their network.
Very good. Folks want to get more information about what y'all are doing every day, even if there's not a threat from Russia. How do they get information about your business?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at harfordtech.com. We're located on the corner, for those that are in the town, 50 North Broad Street, Broad and St. Francis. And we are on all social media at Harford Tech, or Harford Technologies, LLC. And you can call us 251-690-9029.
Abe, as always, man, I appreciate you, and I'll probably be hollering at you soon.
All right, Don, I appreciate you. Have a good one.
You too. Abe Harper with Harford Technologies, and we're coming right back.